Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Isaac Davey Aronson filling in for Brian Lehrer here on WNYC, and it's time now for the latest and one of the last installments of your anecdotal census of people's history of the New York area from 2000 to 2010. Today, we're looking at the Bronx, otherwise known as Bronx County. And as always, we want you to join in to examine how the county has changed in the last 10 years. So whether you live in Melrose or Mott Haven, Morris Park or Morrisania, we want to hear from you. Call into 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC, or leave a comment on our website. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And while we're about it, we also want to hear why there's a Morris Heights and a Port Morris. But there's lots to discuss this hour in the Bronx, so you can start calling in now from Bronxwood, Riverdale, or Kingsbridge. We want to hear what's changed the most about your community in the last 10 years. Who's been moving in? Who's been leaving? What's an untold story of change in the Bronx that you think needs to be told? As I said, you can also go to WNYC.org, click on the Brian Lehrer Show, and leave your comment there. What kind of development has there been in the Bronx? How has the housing stock changed in the last 10 years? Tell us what you think has changed the most in the borough. 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. And here's a little context to get us going with the Bronx. Of the roughly 1.3 million people living in the Bronx, nearly a third are foreign-born. And more people in the Bronx speak a foreign language at home than speak only English. And that foreign language is usually Spanish. In 2000, Congressional District 16 was the poorest in the country. In New York State, it was also the most Hispanic and the youngest. Well, here to help us look at and understand more about demographics in the Bronx is Bill Bosworth, professor of political science at Lehman College and director of the Bronx Data Center. Professor, welcome back to WNYC.
Well, thank you very much. Glad to be there.
The last time you were on the show, you were telling us why the Bronx has so few men. Let's dig a little deeper. The Bronx is made up of so many different areas, and they vary so widely. How do you compare a neighborhood like Riverdale to Bronxville? Can you give us a very brief and very quick primer on how to digest the Bronx?
Well, first of all, I don't think you should compare Riverdale with Bronxville. Bronxville, of course, is in Westchester. And I think Riverdale has some similarities to Bronxville, but the fact is that it is in the Bronx, and we have to aggregate all of the data that we have for Riverdale as well as for the South Bronx and Throgs Neck and so forth to have a composite picture. Now, what you say, I think, is very important. The composite picture we get of the Bronx is not a picture that is a view of any normal human being or even normal neighborhood. If you take a very rich area, and there are parts of Riverdale that are very rich. There are parts, by the way, which are not particularly rich. With a very poor area in the South Bronx, you add them together and divide by two, what have you got? Statistically speaking, it may be important, but from the point of view of real life, I'm not sure it is. What you really see, if you're talking about the Bronx from 2000 to 2009 or 2010, is a very interesting increase in the overall population. You know, if you want to talk again in Bronx terms, every single year from 2000 to 2009, the Bronx population went up. So that by 2009, it was almost 5% greater than it was in 2000. And that's a higher figure than any place, any other major borough except Manhattan, much higher than places like Nassau County, for example. And indeed, there are cities, Buffalo, Detroit, Philadelphia and so forth, which went down from 2000 to 2009. That's not true for the Bronx. And so, you know, the question is, well, what is responsible for this rise in population? And as we dig down and get into, you know, not statistics, but normal people, what we find is the Hispanic population in the Bronx has continued to rise every year more than any of the other groups in the Bronx. And indeed, its rise has compensated for the fact that the non-Hispanic whites have continued to decline every year from 2000. 2000 to 2009.
Well, let's get one of those individual voices from the Bronx. E is on the phone. E, what's the change you've noticed most over the last 10 years?
I'd say the change that I've noticed has definitely been, first of all, I live in the Northwest Bronx, and as the person you have on, the expert on the phone, mentioned each part of the Bronx is really different. So, I mean, most people often think the Bronx is, like, the same, and it's got, you know, but it's very different in the different areas of the Bronx. And so, as I said, I live in the Northwest Bronx, and primarily, and I've lived there since, I'd say, 85, 84. And primarily then it was sort of, definitely mostly Hispanic, more Puerto Rican than anything else, some black folks. I'm black myself. And, of course, you had sort of like white Irish, those who were immigrants in the Northwest Bronx. And I've noticed the change throughout the years, and particularly now, that especially in the 90s, the white immigrants that you did have were mostly Albanians, and they continue to grow. And you have more Southeast Asians. I would say more definitely they seem to be Pakistani. And there's a Korean element there, so you have some Korean restaurants, and you have the Latin growth has been Mexicans, and I'd say some Dominicans from Washington Heights.
Well, I definitely want to get into
and also I'd like to, and there's been a West African increase, and so there's a church in my neighborhood that's probably the most, and it's Catholic, and it's probably the most ethnically diverse church. You'll see all these ethnic groups in that church, that has changed. What's changed ethnically, and also you've had some young white professionals. I've noticed at my stop, because I'm in the Northwest, but that Bedford Park area, and young artists who can't afford to live in other places, in the other, you know, trendier places in Brooklyn and Manhattan, and so they've lived there. And another thing I'd say. The Northwest Bronx, is, from what I've seen, was never affected by sort of like burnt out buildings and so forth. But you had a lot of, you know, buildings. There were a lot of buildings and, you know, kept buildings and so forth. And there's some doorman buildings and what have you. But in the last 3 years, I noticed actually two buildings go up, which is rare because the land is pretty full with buildings. And one was a kind of low income building, and then another building was actually a building where, you know, I guess the rents are market price rents, and it's a brand new building, and there's sort of like, I don't think there's any Section 8 or anything like that. So those have been the sort of like the trends
Well,
E,
thank you very much for your call. Appreciate it. And lots of changes happening in many different ways in the Northwest Bronx. And I know we're going to get in with Bill Bosworth from Lehman College in just a moment. I want to ask about the diversity within the growing Hispanic community, which E mentioned. But first to Caroline in Fordham, what are the changes you've seen over the last 10 years?
Change of Hispanics from everywhere here. The food has become incredibly delicious. More people from Jamaica and Africa, and especially in our medical profession. I'm just very happy about what has happened. The change of total Hispanic growth has made me very happy. I enjoy it.
Thanks very much for your call, Caroline. And Bill Bosworth, director of the Bronx Data Center, I mean, we heard from both of those callers about...
They were terrific.
Yeah, about increase in diversity in lots of ways, but both did mention the increase in diversity within the larger Hispanic community. Can you talk about that?
Right. Well, of course, there are people moving into the Bronx from virtually every part of the world, including, as we heard, Jamaica and West Africa. As far as the Hispanic community is concerned, it's by far the biggest. More than half the population of the Bronx is Hispanic. There are really three big chunks of the Hispanic community. And they don't seem to be changing too much in terms of their preponderance. There are some people from other areas moving in, but about half of the Hispanics, maybe two-fifths, are from Puerto Rico still. That population is stabilized. It's not increasing. It can't increase too much. Puerto Rico's a small place. Number two, Dominicans. By far the largest number of Dominicans in any county of the United States lives in the Bronx, many more than live in Manhattan. Just about a quarter of a million Dominicans live in the Bronx. And number three is Mexicans, 66,000. Well, that's a big number, but, you know, it's not 224,000 as there are Dominicans, and it's not the 320,000 Puerto Ricans. You add those three together, and you have just about half the Bronx population. So there are, yes, there's diversity, but you can't ignore the fact that these three Hispanic groups are really the dominant ones. And the interesting thing about them is each one of them has a kind of connection to the Bronx and to North America, I guess you can say, which is a little bit different from older immigrant groups. That is to say, for Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, and Mexicans particularly, it's very easy to come back and forth to the home country. You can take a flight to San Juan or Santo Domingo. You can take a bus to El Paso and walk across a bridge, and you're home. So that their connection to the U.S. isn't the kind of permanent connection that you had in the old days when somebody took a boat from Europe, and when he came here, it was forever, and he had to forget the old country and so forth. So we have a Hispanic population, which consists of these three big groups, all of which keep very special and very strong ties to their homeland. And this is great. That means that, you know, you're going to have authentic restaurants opening up here. But it also means that there may be some problems in terms of learning English and other aspects of American culture.
Well, and I want to ask you about that. And at first, I just wanted to say that speaking of the change in immigration patterns, Greg from the Northwest Bronx comments on our website. He says that most of the Irish in the Northwest Bronx are long gone, as are most of their pubs on Bainbridge Avenue and East 204th Street, a few of which were still around 10 years ago. But he says that the immigrant enclaves have changed a lot. He says, my neighborhood, Norwood, has seen a big influx of Bangladeshis and Mexicans, yeah, which is evident both on the sidewalks and parks and also in the small businesses.
Yeah.
I'm Isaac Davey Aronson, in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC. I'm talking with Bill Bosworth, professor of political science at Lehman College and director of the Bronx Data Center. And we're taking your calls for our Bronx anecdotal census. What's changed in your neighborhood in the Bronx over the last 10 years? 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. And Bill Bosworth, you were talking about the language issue, and I mentioned earlier that more people in the Bronx speak a foreign language at home than speak only English. How is that expected to change when the new census information comes in?
Okay, well, there's no question that the Mexican and Dominican population, almost 100% of them speak Spanish at home. And since they together constitute, well over 300,000 people in the Bronx, I think the figures are going to be more or less similar. What's interesting is the Puerto Rican population. Now, they've been here a bit longer. Of course, they're all American, native-born Americans. And the fact is, over 20% of the Puerto Ricans speak English only, 20%. And 80% of the Puerto Ricans, whether they speak English or Spanish or what have you, 80% speak English very well. Now, what does this mean? Well, you've heard of the melting pot, and a lot of people reject the idea of melting pot. Is it possible that a large number of Puerto Ricans will forget their Hispanic? Just as a large number of Italian Americans have forgotten, well, maybe they call themselves Italian Americans, but that doesn't mean the same thing as being Italian does when you're in Italy.
Sure, sure.
And so you can call yourself Hispanic, but if you can't speak Spanish, if you live in the suburbs, if you're middle class, what does that mean? we're going to confront this problem more and more. Take Dominicans. Did you know that more than half the Dominicans in the Bronx are U.S. citizens? Do you know that?
I did not.
Did you know that 40% of the Mexicans in the Bronx are U.S. citizens? So, you know, what this means is you have people who have some kind of a commitment to America who are Hispanics. But what does it mean? You know, is the Bronx a part of a melting pot which is going to really continue in the 21st century so that you have a culture where Hispanics contribute just as blacks contribute to American culture? You know, you have M&M. Everybody knows how to do a new kind of handshake. You know, there are all sorts of aspects of our common culture, which come from blacks, which come from whites, which come from Irish, and so forth. And can't Hispanics, instead of being separated, contribute to this common culture and just sort of blend in so that we're not Anglos anymore, we're just Americans? And it seems to me that Puerto Ricans are leading the way. This is going to happen. This has happened. This has happened to hundreds of thousands of Puerto Ricans who've already blended in, just as Italian Americans did in the last century. It is going to continue to happen, and it's going to be speeded up because the other element in all this, which is race, is being redefined. Basically, it's being redefined by Hispanics in the Bronx as we speak.
Well, let's turn briefly to another aspect of the Bronx, which is we're going to talk to someone a little bit later in the show about food pantries in the Bronx and the problems with hunger in the borough. I mean, what can you tell us about income levels? The borough has the highest unemployment rate in the city at 12.7%. In fact, that's the highest unemployment rate in the state.
Right.
What else do we know about the economics of the Bronx?
Well, first of all, there is a tremendous diversity here, again, between the North Bronx and the East Bronx together, which is sort of one group, and then the South Bronx. The South Bronx, as you said, Congressional District 16, which is entirely in the South Bronx, has the highest poverty rate, and particularly the highest poverty rate among kids in the whole United States, among all the congressional districts in the United States. And, you know, if you look at some of the groups that we have here, it's really interesting, you know, the what they call median household income. Half the households have more, half less. For those non-Hispanic whites who are still in the Bronx, that income figure 2 years ago was $52,000. For Dominicans, it was $27,000. For Puerto Ricans, it was $25,000. For blacks, interestingly, it was $37,000. So there is Hispanic poverty in the Bronx more than black poverty. And it can be located, you know, in certain areas. And, of course, you have a kind of a poverty cycle in areas like the South Bronx where, you know, there are relatively few people who speak English, the kind of people I talked about, relatively few middle-class people, obviously. Great difficulties in graduating from high school and going on to college. There's a kind of a vicious circle which reinforces itself there.
And
now, this is something that's not so true in the North Bronx or in the East Bronx. And so, you know, we're hopeful that someone in the school system or someone in the administration or someone who's a responsible parent can help us deal with this cycle of poverty. But it's extremely complicated, and it's sometimes devastating. Here's just one figure to end what I'm saying. You take Mexican families that are headed by women that have children, single women with children, Mexicans. 71.3% of those families are below the poverty level. And we're talking about kids, you know, families with kids, 71.3%. And that's pretty devastating.
Well, and we're going to be touching on these issues repeatedly, I'm sure, throughout the hour. And Bill Bosworth, professor of political science at Lehman College, director of the Bronx Data Center, I want to thank you for joining us on WNYC for our Bronx Anecdotal Census. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And we're going to turn now to Fernando Ferrer, former Bronx Borough President and former mayoral candidate. Mr. Ferrer, welcome back to WNYC.
Be back.
I'm going to ask you the same question we've been asking our callers. Looking back to 2000, what's the biggest change you've seen between now and the way the Bronx was 10 years ago?
Well, probably the ethnic and language picture of the borough has altered. The old divides of African American and Puerto Rican and Italian and Jewish and Irish have changed an awful lot. Adding to that picture of Dominicans and Mexicans and other Central and South Americans, as well as Jamaicans and other Caribbeans, as well as Africans and Guyanese. It's making for a very interesting population picture in the borough.
We were just talking with Bill Bosworth a bit about poverty, and when you were borough president, you were largely credited with creating much more affordable housing in the Bronx and with reducing crime rates. Do you think those efforts have been kept up in the borough?
Sure. And I think a witness to that is not only that the momentum was maintained in terms of renewal of neighborhoods that were devastated in the 70s and early 80s, but also people came to the Bronx and are still coming to the Bronx for the same reasons they've come over the course of generations, to do better for themselves and for their families. Bronx has always been a magnet for people from wherever who just wanted their kids to go to school, put food on the table, and see their kids do better than they did. That picture hasn't changed, no matter what language it's spoken in, no matter how people worship or what people look like.
Well, you grew up in the Longwood neighborhood of the South Bronx, an area which has changed significantly, but you also have roots in Hunts Point and in Riverdale. Those are all very different neighborhoods. Have the changes been different in each of those?
Yes and no. Hunts Point's a very interesting place. When I was growing up, you could go to a newsstand and see the forward in Yiddish, Irish newspapers, Italian newspapers, Spanish-language newspapers, as well as the melange of English-language newspapers, from the Journal American to the World Telegram and Sun to the Daily Mirror, now all gone. You saw candy stores, Jewish delicatessens, Chinese restaurants. That has changed texturally. Now you'll see Mexican restaurants. Now you'll see Jamaican restaurants.
So you would say the same amount of diversity, just different diversity.
That's right.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. This is Isaac Davey Aronson in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And when we come back, we'll keep talking about the Bronx with former borough president Fernando Ferrer. And we'll keep taking calls for your anecdotal census. 212-433-9692. 212-433-WNYC. Talk to you in a minute. Isaac Davey Aronson in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Hey, designers, graphic artists, or anyone with a visual knack, you're invited to take part in the Map Your Moves Data Visualization Challenge. We asked our listeners to fill out a form listing everywhere they've lived over the last decade and why they moved. Almost 2,000 of you responded, and now it's up to you artists and graphic designers to make that information beautiful. We're making all that data available for all to download. We want you to present the data as a map, image, movie, or anything visual. It's up to you. Download the data set and find all the information you need at our website, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And we've been talking about the Bronx as part of your anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. If you're from the Bronx and you have a story of change from the past 10 years, give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. You can also go to WNYC.org and click on the Brian Lehrer Show to leave your comment there. And I want to take a call now. Stephen in Bedford is on the line. Stephen, welcome to WNYC.
Well, thank you for taking my call, and I'd like to say hello to former borough president Freddie Ferrer, if he's still there.
How you doing?
Very good, very good. You know, I think we have a mutual friend in Riverdale, up in Dodgewood. I know we met at a couple parties there, and I now live up in Bedford, but I grew up in the Bronx. I was born on Belmont Avenue, 182nd Street, and my family.
Born well.
I'm sorry.
You were born well.
Yeah. As you say, 188th Street, Union Hospital. You know, I mean, one of the hottest days of the year, July 52. But
small town Bronx happening right here.
My family was in the Bronx in the turn of the century, and my father, they first established a butcher shop, and they would deliver up to Tuscanini, who was at Wave Hill. So, long history. The last 10 years in the Bronx are an interesting time to reveal the real character of the place. I mean, it's always going to be a place where people come for economic purposes, a place that they can live economically, and has good decent transportation to labor. Bronx, with the revival of Hunts Point is much better. The Bronx I grew up in was in transition, you know, when they decided to put the Lincoln Center down in the West Side and moved, relocated bunches of people up to the Bronx. It was really a transition for the Bronx that the Bronx was not ready for it. Now I think the Bronx is a much better place. Economically, I don't know anybody who isn't looking for an economic opportunity to either build a building, or it's very hard to find any open space in the Bronx. The Bronx is really maybe very recently in the last couple of years with this economic downturn has had some difficulties, but I think the Bronx in general is really about to reap its benefits geographically. It is located between two very affluent areas, and the labor pool is there. You know, the Bronx is one of the few places, like I say, topographically, which is very diverse, you know, from hills to plains, and unlike lots of other places in the city, which can be pretty boring, the Bronx is pretty interesting, and the borough of parks and the tremendous population where people have an opportunity on the weekends, you can visit around the world just visiting the parks in the Bronx. And, you know, and we have a tremendous educational system. I have some friends working down at the Crescent School down on 180th Street and Crotona Avenue, and I occasionally visit down there, and I just marvel at what the Board of Education has done.
Well, and Stephen, I'm going to stop you there, and thank you for your call, because we actually have another call on that point. Bill is in the Bronxville area, or some know it, the Hub area. Bill, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, and it's good to hear our former president, who did a very, very good job, and followed him are doing a very good job also. Can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
Okay. I want to just say something about the Hunts Point area. The gentleman just spoke, yes, Hunts Point has been built up tremendously. You have the Fulton Fish Market in combination with that. Also, there is a new college that will be opening up in September, the new Boricua College, right on around 3rd Avenue and 161st Street. Also, I wanted to say also that there are many banks, whereas you didn't have the banks, especially in 149th Street area, which I call the downtown Bronx area. Remember, every other borough has an area they call downtown. So South Bronx, it makes it sound like it's all still old and decrepit and still beat up. Look at all the new housing that has been built here in the last 10 years. So maybe we can do a step up. It's downtown. There's money here. And there are people here that have money. Remember, there are many homeowners also. There are landmark brownstones in the downtown Bronx area, and there are many middle-income people here. So those are things that I just wanted to just bring up, and I appreciate you taking my call.
Bill, thank you so much for your call.
That's absolutely right. There are, you know, the Bronx, especially the South Bronx, had some good bones on which to build.
And the former Bronx Borough President Fernando Ferrer, you know, I wanted to ask you, when you, we were hearing a lot of optimism here on the Bronx and a lot of good news. And, you know, when you ran for mayor in 2001, you ran on the idea that there were two New Yorks. And I'm wondering if nearly 10 years later, do you think that's still true? Are there still two New Yorks?
Oh, come on. you know, that idea is as old as Charles Dickens. And as new as you're expressing it just now. When you talk about childhood poverty, when you talk about rates of illiteracy and chronic disease, yeah, sure, there's a New York that does very well, and there's a part of New York that doesn't. And when you talk about a park system, parks in certain neighborhoods look pristine and lovely. In other neighborhoods, noticeably less well-maintained. Yeah, that still applies, and that's a goal that we should keep at the forefront. to make those two New Yorks one New York and give everyone the same opportunity.
One last question before we let you go. At one point, you were possibly going to be the first Hispanic mayor of New York City. In the last election, we hardly saw any Hispanic candidates for citywide office. I mean, keeping our focus on the Bronx, given the significant population of Latinos in the borough, as we've been talking about, do you think it's likely that the place to look for Hispanic candidates is probably the Bronx?
Well, the last two candidates for mayor who were and happened to be Hispanic came from the Bronx, so that wouldn't shock me in the least that the next one might emerge from the borough. But I think it's important to bear in mind, whoever aspires to the office of mayor doesn't aspire to the office of Hispanic mayor or African-American mayor, aspires to the office of mayor of all of New York. And I don't think there's a better experience for governing in New York and feeling comfortable with the wide variety of people and languages and religions and economic groupings than growing up in a place like the Bronx with all that diversity right in front of you.
Well, former Bronx Borough President Fernando Ferrer, thank you so much for joining us on WNYC and the Bronx Anecdotal Census.
A delight. Bye-bye.
Joining us now is Gary Axelbank. He's the host of Bronx Talk, the flagship television program about the Bronx, which many of you are probably familiar with. Welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Thank you so much for having me. There's nothing like more than talking about my home borough, the Bronx.
Well, let's talk about it. Bronx Talk has been around for over 15 years, so you certainly have over a decade of change under your belt. Do you see the demographic changes we've been discussing on the show so far?
Well, there are a number of changes, and what really struck me of the numbers that Professor Bosworth talked about was right at the end when he talked about really the summary of how this new Hispanic population is doing, and he talked about a large amount of Hispanic poverty and the cycle of poverty. I'm very concerned that what we've been doing in the city is not addressing those things. If I can just give you a bit of history through the period of time that I have done the TV show, to his everlasting credit, your previous guest, Freddie Ferrer, worked with community members to build up Charlotte Street and Melrose Commons, and these were internationally known developments. The core of those developments, the fuel for those developments, was community residents themselves. They drew up the plans. He coordinated the plans, and we had a whole section of the borough redone, cast in a way that residents, immigrants, and others saw themselves. The problem that I see now is that the largest projects in the Bronx right now, you have a $3 billion water filtration plant in the Northwest Bronx, you have Yankee Stadium, and you have the Gateway Mall. I don't believe these are the kinds of projects that are going to help address this cycle of poverty. In fact, I believe that these are the things that are sucking the blood and the economics out of the possibilities for many of these people to do better.
Well, I know that you've talked about why it is that you think there hasn't been more resistance to these projects if people, as you say, feel that these aren't the right projects for the Bronx.
It's a matter of access to power. And, frankly, the Yankee Stadium project and the water filtration plant project were spearheaded from the Bronx perspective by Hispanic officials. They may have lost sight of what the needs are of their people. Just last night I did a program about the Sheraton Expressway. It was interesting because one guest wanted to take it down, and the other wasn't so happy about it because he didn't want to fill streets with traffic. But what they agreed on was that they wanted a community vision for their future. Right now, somebody, whether it be the mayor, whether it be local elected officials in the city council or even community boards, has got to say, we've got to listen to what people in our borough are saying, and maybe we can craft our future in their vision as opposed to the vision of business people or people who own chains of stores in other places.
Let's take a call about some of the advantages of the Bronx at the moment. Andrew is calling from Pelham Bay. Andrew, you're on WNYC.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I work in real estate, and I've been working in real estate in New York City for 13 years now. I've lived in the Bronx now for 5 years. I moved because I knew I could always find more square footage per dollar renting so I could save to purchase, which is what I ended up doing. I ended up choosing a neighborhood which I didn't know much about named Soundview. Mm-hmm. This area would make the word blight look like it was wealthy. I've never seen everyone unemployed, Section 8, benefit cards, EBT cards, $10 ATM machines. It is one of the most frightening scenarios that America should really open its eye up and see. Earlier this year in January, I was walking my dog at 7:30 in the morning and was shot in the face by a bullet. I called 911 and waited 45 minutes for a responding officer to show up, even though there was a car parked a block away at the corner of Watson and Elder. I had been shot on the expressway, Service Road, and Elder. I waited 45 minutes for the police to respond. I then waited another 5 minutes for an ambulance. I then drove myself to Jacoby, okay, because I just could not believe how long that took. I've been told that police in that neighborhood are scared to do their patrol. My cousin, who is a cop, who I told that I moved to Soundview, said, you should double think it. And I said, well, right now, financially, that's what I can afford. I was able to find the upside here is I found a 900-square-foot one-bedroom for under $900. I did not know that it was in a war zone. I did not know that my neighbors were drug dealers. I did not know that everyone there was basically not working. The numbers that one of the people you had on previous callers, and I say maybe not just previous caller, but an interview person, he had stated that, you know, there's so much poverty. I think that the TV show guy should have a focus on Soundview.
All right, Andrew. Andrew, I want to thank you for your call,
and I'm very
sorry to hear about what happened to you. Gary Axelbank, sure. Host of Bronx Talk.
I can address really something about what he's saying. Probably the reality in terms of an overview of the borough is a midpoint between what he said and the gentleman from Bedford who was talking about how glorious business is and those kinds of things in the Bronx, but we can't discount what this gentleman is saying. And, you know, what immigrants need is housing, education, health care, and jobs. And if you look at plans for the Bronx, I'm not hearing overwhelming plans for those kinds of things. And so what that gentleman was saying, he's not hearing answers either. I think that's part of the frustration.
Well, Gary Axelbank, host of Bronx Talk, thanks so much and keep up the good work.
Thank you so much for having me.
We have to take a quick break, but when we return, we'll keep talking about the Bronx as part of your anecdotal census series on WNYC. Stay tuned. Welcome back. I'm Isaac Davey Aronson, filling in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we're talking about the Bronx and how it's changed in the last 10 years. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. And we're now joined by Michaela Crater, who's Executive Director of Sustainable South Bronx, a community group advocating for more green jobs in the Bronx, which I believe is soon approaching its 10th anniversary. Is that right, Michaela?
That is correct.
Well, before the break, we were talking to Gary Axelbank, host of Bronx Talk, and one of the things we were talking about was some of the developments that have happened that are underway in the Bronx, such as Yankee Stadium and the Croton Filtration Plant. And he was suggesting that these projects might not be the best for the Bronx, but that maybe community groups, coalitions were unable to sort of get the access to power that they needed to organize against them. But now your organization, Sustainable South Bronx, is a community organization. What do you say in response to that? Do you agree with that?
I would actually agree with that. I mean, well, one of the interesting vantage points I have is that I was actually with the former borough president's office during the time in which some of those projects were being fleshed out and considered. And so I saw firsthand some of the struggles many of the groups, and now the group that I actually work for, were embarked in and going through and trying to figure out how to have an influence and how to ensure that the community was truly benefiting from these larger mega developments, if you will.
Well, as we said, you started in 2001, and what's been the biggest changes, and what's the biggest demographic change you've seen in your community over the past 10 years?
Well, you know, what we've seen in the South Bronx, and particularly Hunts Point, the Longwood, Mott Haven sections, is, you know, another array and influx of individuals. We've seen an increase in the Latino population and mostly an increase in immigrants. We've seen a very heightened increase in the Mexican population here. So while the Puerto Rican demographic is still quite strong, we're seeing the additional Latino group of a lot of folks from Mexico coming in as well as several, you know, communities that are having strong African influence. So I would say that the community demographic is getting more diverse, but on a surface level, you know, the color stream is still the same. It's very mixed. It's very flavorful of people with some really, I have to tell you, I live here and the food is amazing. And it's one of the things that, you know, you can feel like you're in another world just because the demographics are so strong with different influences.
And you're certainly not the first person this hour to mention the diversity and the quality of food in the Bronx. And I know you've said that you know, much of the South Bronx is better off than it used to be, but you know that there are still a lot of environmental problems. Talk about that.
Sure. I mean, one of the different many struggles we have embarked on is trying to look at how economic development can also be a form of development that restores the environment. When we look at and reflect upon what has happened in the Bronx in the past, you know, the food markets, for example, had a strong influence in terms of economic development. Unfortunately, it also played a role in really creating a lot of environmental issues that the community faces today. We have some of the highest asthma rates, and this is, you know, connected directly to the high traffic that's generated from these trucks. We have 60,000 trucks that come into the neighborhood on a weekly basis. So, you know, our infrastructure supports these types of industries that are heavily truck-based, and with that comes the environmental impact. The other component that plagues the quality of life and the environmental well-being of the community is the power plants, the fact that we still have a sewage treatment facility. And while we recently just experienced a significant win with the closure of the former New York Organic Fertilizing Company, you know, the company itself created a lot of havoc on the air quality and exacerbated the asthma rates in the neighborhood and in the surrounding community. So, you know, we kind of hold our breath when the city or when developers come by with new plans, because we've seen too often that these plans for economic development generate a host of environmental unintended consequences. And so what our role and the partners that we work with, you know, we try to ensure that these projects actually create a net benefit for the community, not beyond just the jobs, but also in terms of environmental improvements.
Well, and connecting the environmental issues with some of the joblessness and some poverty that we've been talking about this hour, your group has been working to bring in green-collar jobs to the community, certainly a top priority of the federal government right now. How successful have you been?
We've been, you know, impressively successful. I mean, as a small community organization that got its start about 10 years ago, you know, we've been working very diligently on connecting the dots, trying to find the growth sectors and what we believe to be an emerging green economy. And what's exciting now is that it's on the national radar. I mean, when we got our start in 01, you know, most folks kind of rolled their eyes and thought we were crazy when we talked about green-collar jobs and talked about a green economy and talked about how sustainability could be the mechanism to restore what is known as the South Bronx. And so we've been able to, you know, expand our training program significantly in the last 2 years. We've doubled our numbers in terms of people that we're training. We've expanded the program to include the emerging field of energy efficiency and weatherization, which is what, you know, the Obama's administration is strongly supporting with federal dollars. The big challenge for ourselves and actually groups that are our peer partners is how do we, now that we're poised and part of what we might be considered the mainstream efforts to green the economy, how can we be part of the action? And that's the big challenge, because a lot of groups like ourselves who've really kind of grown and from a strong belief that this is possible, we're not necessarily the best candidates for federal money because we just don't have the infrastructure to take on these larger federal grants. And so oftentimes we miss out just because we don't have the bandwidth to fill all the checklists appropriately. So that's a big goal of ours, and going towards the future is being able to be the right scale and scope for taking on larger resources that come down from the federal level.
And I just want to take a quick call from Leslie in Riverdale, who's a fifth-generation New Yorker, I believe. Leslie, you're on WNYC.
Yes, I'm a fifth-generation New Yorker, a second-generation Bronxite, and we grew up in the University Heights section of the Bronx, and one of my relatives still lives in the apartment building where we all grew up. And within the past couple of years, there's been a substantial immigration into his building of people from the Himalayan countries of Nepal and Bhutan. Hmm. And also in the parish church that we grew up in, St. Nicholas of Tolentine, there's a large population now of Korean people. So they have Sunday Mass in English, then in Spanish, then in Korean. So there is a substantial population, a growing population of people from Asia, as well as people who speak Spanish in the University Heights section.
Leslie, thank you for your call, and just another example of the different kinds of diversity that are growing in different neighborhoods in the Bronx. I'm going to have to say goodbye to Michaela Crater, Executive Director of Sustainable South Bronx, the community group advocating for more green jobs in that borough. Michaela Crater, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for asking.
And we turn now to Noura Amatulla, the founder and executive director of the Muslim Women's Institute for Research and Development, which operates two halal food pantries in the Bronx. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Good morning.
And one of the food pantries is in Highbridge in the Southwest Bronx. The other is in Parkchester, a neighborhood in the South Central section of the Bronx. What's been the biggest change that you've witnessed in the communities where you operate, Highbridge and Parkchester, over the past 10 years?
The biggest change that we've witnessed in the clientele that we serve at the food pantries is change in the ethnic makeup of our clientele. In Highbridge, we have a sizable West African population that is intermixed with folks from the Spanish-speaking Caribbean and South and Central America. And in Parkchester, we have an Asian population of Mandarin-speaking Chinese, which is kind of unique.
How has the issue of hunger, changed over the past 10 years in your community? That's the area in which you're working.
Hunger has changed in that a lot of these fairly new populations to the borough are operating in many instances in the underground economy. A lot of them are working poor households with fixed incomes. So they are, and as the prices of rent and transportation continue to increase, they find themselves not being able to meet their other basic needs of food and clothing.
And, of course, one of the problems in the Bronx is a scarcity of fresh food. What's the problem there?
The Bronx has been identified as one of the areas in the United States of a food desert. We have challenges around supermarkets having access to food, supermarkets that provide a wide variety of fresh produce. Particularly in Highbridge, there are really no supermarkets, and Highbridge is one of the more densely populated areas in the country.
I want to take a call right now from Walt in the Bronx, who has a take on the political scene in the Bronx. Walt, you're on WNYC.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I just recently ran in the last election cycle for City Council for the 18th District, which is encompasses Soundview and Parkchester, Classic Point, Castle Hill, et cetera. And it's been a rather interesting race, to say the least. I had served on the community board for four consecutive terms recently, have not been appointed by the borough president. I have been very active in the Parks Committee along with the chairman, Ken Padilla. We've taken a very community-based activist role on our park planning, particularly Soundview and Bunchley Creek. These, as you may be familiar with, are heavily contaminated landfill sites that were scheduled to receive approximately $30 million in Croton funds. But unfortunately, the money's disappeared, and many of the projects haven't been completed, and those that have are been watered down. And, you know, we're very, very concerned about the contamination and remediation that does not testing that doesn't seem to be taking place. Now, we know the South Bronx has been getting a lot of attention in these areas, but the areas of Soundview particularly seem to be getting the short end of the stick.
Well, Walt, I want to thank you for your call and, you know, another view there on some of the problems politically in the Bronx. And we're going to have to leave our Bronx anecdotal census there. I want to thank our final guest, Noura Amatullah, the founder and executive director of the Muslim Women's Institute for Research and Development. Thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
And we've been talking about the Bronx, and next week we turn to Morris and Union counties in New Jersey and Putnam and Dutchess counties in New York. If you live in those counties, go to our census page at WNYC.org to leave your comment about change in the last 10 years. The Brian Lehrer Show was produced today by Lisa Allison, Jody Avergan, Paige Cowett, Alan Smith, and Karen Camp with Alana Casanova-Burgess. We got intern help from Noah Litvin and Rafael Vera. That's Jason Isaac at the audio controls, and Megan Ryan is the senior producer. I'm Isaac Davey Aronson, in for Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening. Amy Eddings will be in for Brian tomorrow. Thanks so much, and have a great day.